My guest is Terry Pratchett. We're in the second hour of Now That's Weird, and we're live in Hinckley in Leicestershire tonight at the Discworld Convention. Now, we were talking about the speed of light, and I know that there was a little anecdote you were saying in the break there you'd like to tell me about.
As I'm sure you're aware, often when one is being recorded, one signs a little disclaimer giving permission for the recording and so forth. And I shall spare people's blushes about this. I was on a particular show somewhere on the planet, and they wanted me to sign a disclaimer, and it said for this particular broadcast, you know, they wanted the rights for the universe. I forget the wording, and I said, "Well, not the whole universe for nothing. I'll tell you what, you can have the rights for Earth and the solar system, and then a penny per solar system thereafter." And they laughed, and so we changed it on the sheet, and that was it. Little did they know my long-term plan. You see, that was 8 years ago. So they already owe me, tuppence, yes, because that means Alpha Centauri has actually been able, very, very powerful receivers on Alpha Centauri would be capable of picking up that signal by now. And it's pretty close to Sirius, so I'm probably in pocket by 11 pence. But as the signal, since it will never entirely die, or at least so I will argue in court, every year that goes past, that expanding bubble of that interview will be passing more and more stars. I shan't really make the big money for several hundred years, but sooner or later, my descendants will own the entire planet.
And possibly the universe. There you go. Now, I see that you're wearing a badge with Silas T. Firefly on it. Yes. Explain why.
I like conventions. Conventions are a lot of fun. And while at this convention, you'll see people in costume and people clearly, you know, having great fun doing ridiculous things, in the last 3 or 4 hours, I've had conversations which included, is the biblical Song of Solomon the best love song ever written, or the best love poem ever written? And fans are immensely interested in all kinds of things. But at a convention like this, I am full on the whole time. And we found a few conventions ago that if I have an alternate identity, in this case that I have a badge with Silas T. Firefly on it, I wear that one. Silas T. Firefly, we tell the fans, is an unfortunate fan who just happens to look exactly like me. But if you see someone who looks exactly like me wearing the Silas T. Firefly badge, don't interrupt him. You know, don't go and ask him to sign something. Let him have a drink with his friends. It means I'm kind of, you know, having a little bit of a rest from being me.
Right, that's a good idea. I should do one of those for myself sometimes when I'm out and about, I think. Right, when you're at home and you do get spare time in between writing books, if you get any, what sort of books do you read yourself and what sort of things do you enjoy doing?
As you may expect, I have a huge science library. But periodically I clean it out because the science has changed. I read a lot of social history. I read less and less fiction these days because I write fiction, and I suppose I'm learning over the years, as I've indicated earlier in this interview, that sometimes the truth is stranger and more interesting than the fiction, and has the additional advantage of being true. So social history, crime. I do like crime, real crime. I read up on that. The history of the American West, personal interest. I find a lot to read.
Do you have a particular favourite author?
So many. But I was recently rereading The Origin of Species, and I realised how beautifully written the book was. I read it the first time when I was about 13, and I had flu at the time, so I was hallucinating. So I was hallucinating as I was reading it, which gave me the kind of multicoloured Origin of the Species movie in my head. But it was the first popular science book, and it was magnificently written, and it can still be read with great profit. Now, I won't say Darwin is my favourite author. I have so many, but I think probably one that had a lot of influence on me was G.K. Chesterton, who lived in the same town where I was born, though he died in 1936. He's best known for the Father Brown stories, which are probably the books that are still in print, but he wrote The Napoleon of Notting Hill and also The Man Who Was Thursday, which were incredibly beautiful books. Mm. He was also a staunch Catholic, so I find it rather strange that he and I share very similar views about mankind and the universe.
There you go. What about television? Do you get any time to watch television? If so, what do you enjoy?
I watch the news at 10 o'clock every day, and I watch very little television. Usually it's old movies if I watch it. I've got no beef against it, except reality television gets right up my nose.
You and me both.
and there is too much of that. I mean, if there is something that's going to be particularly interesting, I'll watch it, but it doesn't feature in our lives. We have quite a large TV screen, but mostly that's because I have a big collection of DVDs.
Mm-hmm. And what about films? What would you say would be your favourite film of all time?
Well, again, you know, you it's a shame you have to pick one out of an awful lot, but I would say that I often watch again the movie Contact, based on Carl Sagan's book, with Jodie Foster as Ellen Arroway, the scientist, and it is about the planet receiving an incontrovertible, or at least so it's supposed, message from another alien race, and it's quite a good digest of the book, and I find it a very interesting movie to watch and re-watch. And after that, it would be The Time Bandits, Terry Gilliam's movie, which has given us great pleasure over the years, and it's one of the comfort movies that you watch on a Friday night after a hard week.
Definitely. Well, I've taken to watching UK Gold just lately, and all the comedy repeats from the 70s and 80s. I think it's about the best thing on telly at the moment. Mm. It says a lot, doesn't it? Terry, just a couple of quick ones. I know we're wary of time. The Stone of Scone.
Yes.
Now, as someone that has been doing a lot of Knights Templar research and has been in Scotland looking for connections between the Sinclair family, the Knights Templars, the Stone of Scone, the Spear of Destiny, I assume that when you wrote about the Stone of Scone...
Correction, it was the Scone of Stone, rather than the Stone of Scone.
That's it, yes. That's it.
Do I mean that the right way around? In other words, yes, it was a scone, in fact.
Yeah, exactly. So how did that all come about in the first place? Because I found that hilarious.
All I really wanted as a MacGuffin for a plot, if you know what that means... something to hang a plot on was... You see, in the Discworld series, in Lord of the Rings, the elves make this wonderful bread, which is very light and nourishing. In Discworld, the dwarves make a dwarf bread, which is incredibly heavy. And really, it's not something you really want to eat unless you're forced to. And they have a tradition of the scone of stone, ancient scone which their first king sat on and left indeed the impression of his buttocks in it, and that has become a kind of a holy symbol of the kingship and how it's passed on. And in the book, this is stolen, and I was really just, that was it. I mean, I know about the Stone of Scone. We have to be careful how we say it. And It was just both it was funny and it was a useful image and it carried some baggage. I mean, let's be careful here. The Templars and the Da Vinci Code and things like that, this is all grist to the mill. I don't really have to believe in these things, but I find it helpful to know that other people do, or possibly are going to extend it some conditional belief, mm-hmm. And until evidence one way or the other comes forward. I mean, I like playing around with those ideas in the same way that I like playing around with the ideas, say we say, that modern physics generates, because there are some interesting moral questions that come out of this. For example, in one of my books, the whole question of the parallel universe comes in. One of my characters comes up with a reasonably good objection to the concept of the possibility of there being parallel universes which are almost but not exactly the same as this one. And he says to Commander Vimes of the Watch, who loves his wife to distraction, said, is there any possibility that there could be a universe where you, as you are now, would go home and stab your wife to death? And he said, no, there is no way. She said, right. Therefore, you've proved that morality has some kind of a part to play in the physics. And while this was just an exchange between a couple of fictional characters, it's probably something worth thinking about. Are we automatically the prisoners of some kind of destiny? Can we actually change? Can we change physics in a sense? Can actually a moral decision change physics? Remember, if it's possible that the world can exist in any kind of state that is actually physically possible under the basic laws, then there is a heaven. There is a planet where mankind did everything right from the word go, made the right decisions, listened to the sensible preachers rather than the wild-eyed ones, and did things right. And even if there's just one, would that be worthwhile?
Oh, yes.
The problem is that in order to get, since we seem to be better at making bad decisions, that means there's several billion trillion smoking hells that we made with the wrong ones. But one of the things that emerges is that we have got a choice. We can decide what to do next. We are not prisoners of physics. Our brains are part of the equation.
One thing I always say on this show is, you mentioned it earlier, about for every answer, it brings up more questions. And certainly in the paranormal, in the research that I've been doing, there's at least 10 questions for every answer. But one thing that I always say to people is the paranormal is only that which is currently not describable as normal. Because it just means things that haven't been yet proven. And the paranormal, let's face it, electricity may have been called paranormal once. So I think people can't just disregard it. But it's an interesting theory. And certainly when I look at some of your books, I do see things there that make me think, oh, I just want to research that. I just want to check that out.
Everything you say is totally correct. But there's something that must be pointed out. You know, they laughed at Newton and said he was wrong. And they laughed at Einstein and said he was wrong. But they laughed at Charlie Bingelbat and said he was wrong, and he was wrong. So it is true that sometimes what would appear to be the most outlandish ideas turn out to be correct, but there's also a lot of outlandish ideas that turn out to be nothing more than outlandish ideas. So, you know, we must keep an open mind, but we must be careful of the motives of the people that try and put things in it.
Definitely, no, I agree with that. Okay, just one final question, Terry, if I may. I heard rumours some time back that you've never allowed Discworld to go to the big screen because you didn't think anybody could carry off the humour properly. Mm-hmm. Now, can we expect to see it on the big screen at any point in the future?
Yes. I think there's been a number of things that have led to this happening. The BBC made an incredibly good job of doing Johnny and the Bomb, one of my children's books, and I thought, hey, this stuff can work. I've seen the first half of the movie of Hogfather that's being made by Mob Films for Sky at Christmas. And it's incredibly good, and it's got a cast list of British actors to die for. And it's good, and I thought, this is fine. And I have now signed a contract with Sony. Sam Raimi is going to do The Wee Free Men, a children's Discworld book. And We've had long discussions, and I'm meeting the scriptwriter, and it might happen. I mean, after all this time, it looks as if we might be going towards the big screen.
Fantastic. Terry, thank you very much for taking time out of the busy schedule I know you have here at the convention, and thanks for joining me on Now That's Weird.
Thank you.